On Sunday, one of the nation's most secretive bodies convenes to determine the course of crucial human events. We're speaking naturally about the National Collegiate Athletic Association Division I Men's Basketball Tournament Selection Committee. The group of 10 college sports administrators will decide who gets to play and then who plays whom in the 65-team tournament that begins on Tuesday. Joining me now, as he does most Fridays, is Wall Street Journal sports writer Stefan Fatsis. Welcome, Stefan.
Hi, Robert.
And this committee operates in such secrecy that you'd think it was guarding the country's nuclear codes. Explain the process for picking the teams for this tournament some call March Madness.
Well, there are 65 teams, as you mentioned. 31 are conference champions. They get automatic spots in the tournament. That leaves 34 other slots. This panel, athletic directors and conference commissioners, is holed up in a Westin hotel in Indianapolis where the NCAA is based. They're watching games. They're evaluating team records. They're looking at computer ratings, schedules, recent games, performance against teams in the top 10, top 25, top 50. And on Sunday, they will announce who's in the tournament and who's not.
And then they seed the teams and place them in the brackets that people will begin filling out next week. Inevitably, the committee's decisions are always second-guessed.
They are, but their job is, to be fair, harder and harder. There is much more competition down lower in the rankings of college teams. There's far more parity after you get beyond the sports factory schools. There are a couple reasons for this. One is that the departure of dozens of underclassmen to the pros has meant that the talent is spread out more evenly. Another is that there are more schools now spending the money to try to build winning basketball teams. So there's a lot less difference than there used to be between a middling team in a power conference like the Atlantic Coast or the Big Ten and a team with a better record in a lesser conference like the Mid-American or Mountain West.
But while there are a host of reasons that schools hang on the decisions of the selection committee, prestige, competition, exposure, money is not an insignificant reason here.
No, it's not. And I spent the last couple of weeks looking into this because the Wall Street Journal were running a special section on the NCAA tournament on Monday. We all get wrapped up in the excitement of the tournament, which is elimination, survivor, and we forget that money is really the background here. Revenue from the tournament has grown from $1.4 million in 1970 to a projected $425 million this year. And the bulk of that comes from the $6 billion 11-year contract with CBS. Most of the money from the tournament goes back to the conferences, and they divide the wealth pretty much evenly among their schools. It's crucial. It helps athletic departments offset their deficits, and it helps them support non-revenue-generating sports, which is pretty much everything except for football and basketball.
How does the NCAA decide who gets how much of the money?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. One of the criticisms of the tournament is that it perpetuates the existing power structure in college sports. The money gets distributed in two ways. This year, for instance, $105 million will be awarded based on how many sports and how many athletic scholarships that schools offer. The message there is the more that you spend, the bigger you are, the more money you get back from the NCAA. Another $105 million will be parceled out based on performance. So conferences earn what the NCAA calls units, one unit for every school that makes the tournament and another unit for every win up until the final game. This year, those units are worth around $900,000 apiece, $150,000 per unit paid every year for 6 years. So again, the big conferences with more schools in the tournament stand to earn a lot more.
Speaking of money, I've heard that people have been known to wager on this.
Yeah, estimates $2.5 billion illegally, plus another billion or so online.
Wow. Okay, next week, the women.
We'll do it.
Thank you, Stefan.
Thanks, Robert.
Stefan Fatsis of the Wall Street Journal, who talks with us on Fridays about sports and the business of sports.